Hello, Monarch fans, and welcome to the Hudson Homers podcast. I am Gary, and I am joined, as always, by my awesome co-host, CB Wilkins. CB, how was your weekend, man?
Weekend was great. ODU came out, won the series against Charlotte, and then after the walk-off against ECU. So, I mean, and then Sunday is the most beautiful day of the year so far, so that was fantastic way to cap off a great weekend of winning.
I'm so jealous because I could only get down there for the game on Friday. Had some other stuff here at home Saturday and Sunday, but got to watch the games. But I was so jealous. The crowd looked awesome on Sunday. I know the temperature was like upper 60s, lower 70s. Perfect weather to go drink some beers in Rally Alley and watch the game and see a Monarch win. So jealous, if anything.
Yeah, it was nice. I ran into Brian Bashara. It's Vincent's older brother that played at ODU, and he was out there with his wife and their babies. And he was saying they were there on Saturday, and he was like, "Well, once they woke up Sunday, it was like, well, we got to go back."
Yeah, that is awesome. I've tried not to look at the weather for this upcoming weekend because I'm not going to be able to be there either way. But hopefully, we have some more awesome weather days like that because you could hear it on the TV broadcast that the crowd was into it, the dugout was into it. Just a big game against a good team, and ODU comes out with a win to take the game and the series, which I think got to pay some dividends down the road.
Yeah, I mean, so we're the best team in the American Conference is what I got out of this week.
I mean, you start your week off with a walk-off win against East Carolina.
Against number 11 East Carolina. Number 11 East Carolina is the best part about that.
Yeah, and I mean they've had a good season too. They've earned that ranking for sure. But man, yeah. Stephen Meyer walk off.
Yeah, and what a great moment. I mean, that was one where I know if you follow the Monarchist social medias, I shared the pictures I got of that walk off win. And you know, whenever we have a situation going in the ninth or extra innings where I think we can have a walk off, I like to get them a little. The little place in the stands kind of right above the dugout looking at home plate, hoping to get that moment, you know, of like all the guys at home plate waiting for the guy to come in. And Steven hit that ball and just hit it perfect spot. And I think the wind probably took a little bit, which is fine. That's he hit the right place. And so you got that perfect moment. And I mean, it was just such an awesome way to cap off a good game, you know, a good game with good pitching and good hitting. And just a phenomenal moment.
Yeah, the shots you got were incredible. We used them at odumonarchist.com for Matt O'Brien's post-game recap. Threw a couple extra ones in there and made sure we blast that out on social media just to celebrate a really cool game. But it didn't quite start out great. You've given up a first inning, three-run home run. It kind of felt like, oh, no, here we go again, like the Rutgers series. But that game was very, very different.
So the plus side of the bad experience of the Rutgers series were seeing that the team could fight back, you know, even though Saturday it didn't get all the way, you know, they fought back and still ended up losing because of that solo home run. And then Sunday, you know, got down again and had to come back from behind and win. And then Tuesday got down again and had to cover. So there's a downside to keep getting down in every game, but showing that they could come back and fight, you know, it's really great to see.
Yeah, and obviously the big story going into the East Carolina game was Blake Morgan's return to the mound. Really, the only mistake pitch that he had in that inning was the pitch that went for the three-run home run. Threw for two innings, gave up two hits, three runs, walked two, no strikeouts. But I was just happy to see him back out there on the mound throwing. He looked like he was healthy.
Yeah, I mean, I think I talked to him for a minute this weekend, and he said it felt great. Excited to keep going.
Yeah, and that is awesome. And I imagine that we'll see him again at some point this week with two midweeks against William & Mary. So he's probably going to get another opportunity there. So if you missed him the first time, hopefully you catch him on Tuesday. But man, just a slugfest of a game. I mean, we answered back right away. Alex Boucher, two-run bomb to left center, 3-2. And I think at that point, everyone knew, all right, we're in for a fun one here.
Yeah, I mean, that was one I kind of had to watch part of it. Which I shouldn't have been doing, just kind of keeping up with the score at work. And I got there by about the seventh inning and got to see the end. So it was, yeah, I mean, it was just great to see the guys just fighting in big moments. And again, like you've said it a couple times here, our dugout, the volume and the excitement our guys are showing is just phenomenal. And that's kind of thing you can't be understated. You know, sitting there rooting for your teammates is a big deal. And these guys can feel the energy, they can feel the love, and they're playing for each other. And it's really fun to see.
Yeah, and it was definitely one of those games I'm sure they'll remember for a while and be able to draw on that energy going into the future. You definitely saw it some this weekend to bounce back and win the last two games that series. But Stephen Meyer, it was kind of his show that day, you know, 2 for 4 with 2 home runs, just doing some really great things out there. But, you know, also want to highlight some of the guys that maybe don't get the spotlight that set up some of these big plays. We end up having 3 sacrifice hits in that game. Gavin Abrams had one, TJ Akin, Evan Holman, and Kyle Edwards had a sacrifice fly that brought a run in. So really, even though we were hitting some bombs and getting our dinger count up in that game, we were still doing a lot of those small ball things to kind of help set some things up.
Yeah, TJ had that great bunt. I think it was in the 8th inning. It ended up nobody scored off of it, but it was one of those moments he came up to the plate and you're like, well, you know he's going to bunt. So, and I'm sure the ECU guys knew he was going to bunt. You had a really tough pitcher on the mound, and here's a freshman. And I guarantee TJ wasn't bunting in high school. So for him to come up in that spot and lay down a really good bunt, that's big time from a freshman.
Yeah, absolutely. It goes to that kind of team-first mentality that we hear so much from guys on the team and from the coaching staff about the chemistry within the team. It's if you need to come up and lay down a sacrifice bunt, do it. If you're only going to come in and pinch run and go steal bases, you're going to do that. And it seems like everyone's pretty bought into that. And it was a good example of it there on Tuesday against the number 11 ranked team in the country.
Yeah, looking back, Luke Waters, he's such a quiet guy in general. And then as a baseball player, he's kind of quiet. He goes out, he gets his hits. You know, he hit a home run, but he's not hitting like a big towering, you know, huge home run. So just as a person, as a player, Luke is so quiet, and you forget. Oh yeah, Luke had 3 hits in that game, and I think I have to look at. I got him here in front of me. But he had a great weekend too. He's so quiet and consistent. He's playing a good right field. And so we got to make sure Luke Waters gets his credit and his love.
Oh, absolutely. Luke has had a phenomenal season. I think you're right. He kind of sneaks by some guys, doesn't quite get the talk that a lot of people do. I know we talk about him quite a bit and highlight him, but he's hitting a 302 now on the season, 842 OPS. Yeah. I mean, just playing good baseball and playing consistent baseball. He's also, he's stolen 3 bags too, so he can throw that into the mix as well.
And Luke's, he's not slow, but he's not a super fast guy. He's just very smart. He's just a really good baseball player. You know, his dad's a coach. He played for a lot of good programs. So he's just an excellent baseball player. It's very fun to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, before we go on and chat about the games over the weekend, want to give you all an update on dollars for dingers. We are now at 8 on the season, thanks to 3 in the East Carolina game, and then 1 against Charlotte from Kenny Lavari. And then the other side of the equation, the bucks for bags. 23 for 23.
Bucks for bags.
It's unbelievable. 23 for 23. Yes. Stephen Meyer leads the way, 8 for 8. Kyle Edwards, 4 for 4. Luke's 3 for 3. But we even have guys that are not even getting that many at bats. They're coming in those pinch run situations and making the most of it. So Carter Sunderman, he's 3 for 3 on stolen bases and only has 9 plate appearances this season. Hunter Cole, also 3 for 3 stealing bases, and he only has 6 plate appearances this season. So just seeing it all throughout the lineup of guys being able to come in there and get over so that other guys in the lineup can get them in.
It's very fun to see. I mean, like I said, if you're not going to be the big, huge 100 home run team, which, hey, we might still be, but I'd be surprised. Being this team that can take extra bags and steal bags, it's very good, fun baseball. So, and like I said, and picking their spots and making sure they're not getting thrown out on the bases.
Yeah, we'll see how long we can keep this perfecto streak going of 23 for 23, because that is pretty damn impressive to not get thrown out even at least once, considering the high level of competition that we played. So we'll keep that perfection streak going as long as we can, but they're going to put up some numbers on the base paths this year.
Yeah, I think we're going to see a very high number. It's probably going to be the most we've had in a year in a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to eclipse that mark, I think, here pretty early into conference play. But we'll jump ahead now and take a look at this game against Charlotte on Friday, the opener. Not a great weather day. It's a little cold. And, it was a good 4-2 ball game. Unfortunately, ODU was on the wrong side of it. But kind of like what we saw in the rest of this series, it was pitching dominated for sure.
Yeah, was it 17 strikeouts? ODU struck out 17 times. And Charlotte struck out 16 times. There wasn't a lot of hitting in the game. You know, the Johnny Sutrick, who played in center field for Charlotte, actually a local kid from here. He played at Lancetown High in Virginia Beach before going down to IMG in Florida. He had a nice homecoming, got himself a three-run homer. But aside from that, you know, there really wasn't a ton of offense for either side. Just a lot of really dominant pitching.
Yeah, the pitching was great. And it's funny you bring up Sutrick. You know, I was sitting there kind of joking that he was hitting basically 500 going into that series. And then he's the one that hits the three-run home run. In out of all the guys in their lineup that can hit pretty well, you know, he's the one that ends up hitting the home run down the line and getting it out of the park. And it proved to be the deciding factor in the game. But outside of that, there wasn't a whole lot of offense from that Charlotte side the rest of the series.
No, yeah. I think you put it up earlier. What do you say, 23 scoreless innings in a row for them?
They've given up one run in their last 23 innings, which is pretty unbelievable against a team that hits as well as Charlotte does.
And consistently hits. I mean, year after year after year, they have really great hitting. So that's that says a lot about our pitching staff. They were pretty disgusting this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. On the weekend as a whole, there were a combined 89 strikeouts. ODU pitching had 49 of those. But I want to drill down a little bit more, and we'll talk to Jay Cassidy a little bit about this later in our sit down with him. But the lefty dominance for Old Dominion was on full display this weekend. Our lefty pitchers faced 56 batters. They struck out 30 of them. So 54% of the batters they faced, they struck out. And they gave up one run over 15 innings of work against, again, a Charlotte team that can hit the ball. I was blown away when I was adding those numbers up earlier today.
It's hard to find one or two good left-handed pitchers. And you were right. I think several people mentioned it this weekend, you know, that they just kept bringing in lefty after lefty. I mean, you got Cassidy and Matella and Moore and Trobaugh and Gomez and Dylan Brown started the game. And I mean, it's just guy after guy after guy just going out and dicing people up. I mean, it was something else.
It's wild. You know, even on major league rosters now, you might see one, maybe two left-handed pitchers coming out of the bullpen. And we're just trotting these guys out, and we're almost surprised when they don't strike out the side at this point. That's how many strikeouts they've been racking up.
I mean, you know, I'm one of those big, you know, the line from Bull Durham, trying to throw some ground balls is more democratic. People talk about the immaculate inning, right? The immaculate inning is nine pitches, three strikeouts, mm-hmm. right? To me, the immaculate inning is three pitches. To me, it's three ground ball dribblers to the first baseman on the first pitch. I think that would be the perfect game, right? The perfect game to me is 27 pitches. I think that the, you know, the goal should be to get him, put the ball in play, ground him out, throw less pitches. But strikeouts are cool, man. It's the pitching equivalent of a home run. And they're super fun to watch. So if we're going to be striking guys out, I'm all for it.
They were getting after it this weekend with the strikeouts. And looking at Friday, I do want to point out Charlotte's pitching, because I think Charlotte pitched exceptionally well on Friday. Cole Reynolds got the start, went five innings, gave up just one earned run and struck out nine. He looked great. And then on the back end, Tony Rossi. If that guy is not on a draft board, something is wrong with you.
Man, I didn't get to see Reynolds, obviously, because of work, but I got to see Rossi at the end, and man, that kid was disgusting. That's why, like I was talking earlier about TJ being able to get a bunt off of him. I mean, that's not easy.
He was throwing his fastball 94 to 96. He had, I think it was a slider that was somewhere in that like 85 to 87 range, and then he'd bust you with an off-speed that was 80 to 82. I mean, just filthy. He was in full command to get the two innings save there. And in the bottom of the ninth, we basically opted we were not going to put another right-handed batter up at the plate against him. We were pinch hitting just about every lefty we could. And it threw him off a little bit because, one, it's the righty-on-lefty matchup that you want. But also probably not much scout on the guys that they were bringing in to pinch hit. And we were able to get a couple guys on, just weren't able to get them home. But Tony Rossi, that is one to watch if you're a fan of a Major League Baseball team. He should absolutely be on your draft board.
Yeah, really good pitcher. And you know, again, as we're talking about right-handers in that game, Brandon Pond. You know, Brandon Pond came in, threw another two scoreless, looked just outstanding at the end of that game. So, I mean, that's one thing you can say. I don't think the offense was necessarily that fun to watch this weekend at the Bud, but the pitching sure was.
Brandon Pond threw the last two innings of that game. Only gave up one hit, no runs, no walks, struck out three of the seven batters that he faced. So, just another outing out of the bullpen. I know I've talked a lot about the lefties just because it's odd that we have so many lefties, but everybody else coming out of that pen has been pitching pretty damn well also.
It's exciting to see. I will say that if you can pitch, the hitting will figure itself out by the end of the year. We've definitely seen some teams have some really good seasons at other schools who they were very good at pitching and the hitting was a little kind of like, we'll get it here and there.
But in a weekend where you don't score a whole lot of runs, to take 2 out of 3 from a team like Charlotte just based on your pitching alone is pretty impressive, because if we get that all together where the pitching is doing its thing like it has been and the hitting comes around, it's going to be a whole lot of fun here in a couple weeks. We'll jump ahead now to Saturday. End up being, I think, a 4 o'clock start time for this one. ODU wins it 4-1. And it was a theme on Saturday, theme on Sunday. The Monarchs jumped on them early and made them pay for some mistakes and ended up taking a 3-0 lead right there in the first inning.
It's always great when you can score early. I mean, that's what the goal every time is, your pitcher go out, shut them down the first, and then you put some runs on the board. And they were able to do that and never look back, you know, which is exactly what you want. I mean, walking away, we gave up. Well, we had the shutout right there to the ninth, and just kind of they got that run. And so, you know, whatever. This is a really good game. Again, the hitting, not the best aside from maybe that first inning, but enough. You know, sometimes, like I said, if you got the dominant pitching, just score enough runs.
Early in that game, it's kind of what Rutgers did to us last weekend, where they're able to get the ball in play, get some guys in motion, and then take advantage of errors and plays that don't work out the way that you want to. So we did score all 3 of those runs in the first inning unearned in the scores column, but we earned them by putting the ball into play, singling through the right side, singling through the left side. There was an error that occurred in the outfield, working a little bit longer counts, just kind of being able to manufacture some runs. And the 3-0 lead was pretty big in a game that ends 4-1.
It's one of those things that you got to realize, it's not Major League Baseball. I mean, these guys are very, very, very good, but they're not major leaguers. The reason the major leaguers have gone to trying to hit the ball in the air, trying to hit the ball out of the ballpark, is because you hit the ball on the ground, the big leagues, those guys throw you out. It really doesn't matter where you hit it on the ground. The second base, third base, shortstop, they're all going to get you. You know, college ball, again, this is high-level D1. These guys are really, really good, but they're not pros, they're not big leaguers. If you put the ball in play, you can find holes. And sometimes it's them making some errors. Sometimes it's, you know, you just hit the ball a little bit to where they can't get it and you get on. So if you put the ball in play, good things will happen.
Absolutely. And shout out to our whole pitching staff that day. Dylan Brown got the start, went 4 1/3, no runs, 1 hit, 2 walks, 7 strikeouts. So he was electric. Pitch count got a little bit up there. I think that's what ended up kind of knocking him out of the game. But congratulations to Lincoln Ransom, picking up his first collegiate win on the mound, inning in 2/3, no runs, 1 hit. Just really, really great job on the mound. And then Jacob Gomez getting another 3-out save. Had 5 strikeouts during that. You put someone out there on the mound and they just produce outs for you. That must be a really nice feeling if you're on that coaching staff.
That's the nice thing about Jacob, that when you put him in there in the 7th inning, you know, you can tell him, hey, you got this. I mean, there was nobody was warming up in the bullpen at any point in the Jacob's. Even when he got a few guys on, gave up a run there in the 9th, it was him. There was a full and complete confidence that Jacob was going to finish off that game.
Yeah, absolutely. Jake Tyser was DHing, batting cleanup in that game. He did have a double. He had a hit against East Carolina on on Friday against Charlotte. He had a single. And then we see Kenny Lavari break out a little bit on Sunday in that series clinching win. So glad to see some of those guys that have been struggling a little bit to start the season being able to contribute against some really good pitching from Charlotte and get their rhythm going a little bit for the first time this season.
I really like what Finney did, especially on Saturday and Sunday. He'd been kind of tinkering around the lineup a little bit, you know, Tuesday and Friday. And, you know, Tyser, I think, didn't play a couple games, and Kenny was kind of moving around the lineup. And I think you can kind of tell in the way he constructed it Saturday and Sunday, it was like, look, these are my guys. You know, Jake Tyser is my DH. Kenny Lavari is my third baseman. These are my guys. I know they can play. I know they're really good. And it seemed like he just said, you know what, maybe I could put somebody else in and maybe they get hot and whatever. But it was very clear, at least to me, that there was that idea that these guys, if I stick with them and let them work it out, we're going to have the dividends. And so, and you saw it. You saw Jake and Kenny both have some hits this weekend, both have some productivity, and hopefully that's going to be moving positive. So I really like that he just said, hey, let me just trust my dudes.
And I think you and I both, and probably the players on the team too, would love to see a little more production out of the 5 through 9 spots in the lineup. Looking back to the East Carolina game on Tuesday, 7 of our 8 hits were from the top 4 in the lineup. So Edwards, Meyer, and Waters, and Boucher. That was 7 of the 8 hits, and they drove in all 6 runs. So we're really not even close to firing on all cylinders from an offensive standpoint, but we're still winning games, having a 3-1 week. I mean, that's pretty good spot to be in, and really goes back to that pitching aspect of being so dominant.
I mean, we're really looking for somebody to take a hold of left field and second base. Those are a couple of spots. You know, he's let, I think, 3 or 4 guys play left field, had a few guys play second base, and we're dying for somebody to just decide, hey, this is my spot, and I'm going to have it for a while until you take it away from me. So the opportunity is still there. I mean, any of these guys with a good game or two can really all of a sudden become the guy. And that's what you're really hoping to see, because they're very talented ball players. You know, I mean, a few of these guys, Gavin Abrams he's an outstanding hitter. And so far he's been scuffling at the plate, you know, and it's just a matter of, he's just got to get going because he's extremely good. Same thing with Maverick Stallings. I got to see both these guys a fair amount in the fall, and they're really, really, really good hitters. I mean, again, you know, they were facing our pitchers. Well, we've seen how good our pitchers are. So if these guys were getting hits off of our pitchers, that tells you something about how good they are at hitting.
Yeah, and it's still very early in the season. I feel like we've talked a lot of baseball. We've seen a lot of games, but Luke Waters has the most at-bats of anyone on the team right now with 43. So we don't even have a player with 50 at-bats yet. Yeah. So still a long way to go, still several weeks to figure things out. But to be able to win games when you haven't quite figured out on offense is a luxury, in my opinion. They're wins that you're going to really enjoy having, getting down that selection show, hopefully at the end of the year when we're figuring out where we're going to go play in a regional.
That's the goal. And like you said, figuring out how to win. These guys have shown a lot of heart and figuring out how to come from behind. There's a lot of positives. I mean, you know, you never really want to see struggles. You'd rather just go out and blow teams out of the water and win 20-0 every game. But learning how to win and learning how to win together, there's a lot of pluses there, and they really will battle test you, I think.
And with this schedule that we have in the non-conference, I mean, it's intentionally difficult to make the Sun Belt seem a little bit easier. But I'll tell you, if you looked around some scores of the Sun Belt over the weekend, it is going to be insane when we get into conference play. I mean, Texas State had an absolute slugfest with Texas down at Minute Maid Park. And it was just like Texas State got up 6-0. Texas came back just hitting tanks. And then Texas State ends up hitting a 2-run shot in the 9th inning and shutting them down in the bottom half to win that game. Like, there are teams like that all throughout the Sun Belt that are really, really good. And it is going to be a fun battle to watch when come conference time.
My mom will be stressed. My mom gets extremely stressed when they're not just winning 10-0.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to have many of those games. I think they're all going to be just sweat fest getting through them. Give your heart a couple more tests there before we hit summertime and football comes back here in the fall. It's going to be you're going to go see your cardiologist at the end of the spring, I think.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you. Well, Sunday was an exciting one that didn't really test the heart too much because the pitching just dominated. They picked up the 3-0 shutout. And I mean, our guys, you know, started out with Trent, you know, actually, well, I take that back. Trent did, give us some heart attacks there. He had to kind of battle and fight. But again, 4 scoreless innings, you know, he threw 4 scoreless because, and worked through every one of them. I love that he stayed out there and fought through it.
His pitch count got up, but he kind of looked a little more dialed in there in the 3rd and the 4th inning, finally got a good clean inning out of it. But he's progressed. If you look at, you know, the Rutgers game last Sunday, they were able to get in some runs on him, and he was able to bounce back in that game, and now he looks even better. So I think he's just slowly getting ramped up in the right way. Then Hudson Trobaugh ends up picking up the win, inning in 2/3, no runs allowed, 1 hit, 3 strikeouts. Again, just kind of adding to the weekend that pitching staff had.
Yeah, and it's great to see a kid, you know, freshman coming out and getting his opportunities and really making the most of them. I got a chance I went and saw Hudson pitch in the Maryland State Championship game last spring, and he pitched great. They ended up winning on a walk-off. And so very talented kids. It's exciting to see him get to come in and make a mark already.
Yeah, and Kellen Davis came in mid-inning, got an out to kind of get us out of, I guess you could call it a jam. We'll go with calling it a jam for now.
That at-bat was ridiculous. he got behind 3-0 on the guy. And on 3-0, their hitter took a terrible swing and just dribbled the ball back to Kellen that he threw to the first baseman. It's like, that, what a terrible piece of hitting that. I don't even know who he faced. I don't want to, I guess I'm calling him out, but that just awful, 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 awful batting. I'm glad that Kellen got him out, but just terrible approach.
You kind of started seeing the wheels come off a little bit there for Charlotte later in that game. I know that they had the first baseman got ejected, I think, for chirping an umpire after a called strike three. You could feel that tension building because they were amped up and pretty loud on Friday to come away with the win, but they didn't have a whole lot to cheer about the rest of the weekend. And I can't say I'm sad to see that occur.
Yeah, I mentioned it on the last podcast, Charlotte is the most litigious and complaining team you're ever going to play. I mean, I know for a fact that our coaches prepared our players for it because it's a tactic they use. They really believe, I guess, that if you just are constantly complaining, you'll get the umpires to go your way. I think a couple times they did get that. But I mean, it's they're constantly talking, constantly complaining. The number of reviews are through there. It's amazing the games didn't take forever because they're constantly stopping and talking about something. I mean, it's got to be a tiring to watch if you're a fan of them all season. But that's, you know, it permeates to the players because the players were talking the whole time. And, yeah, their first baseman found it. I think they finally – the umpires are pretty fed up with it by the end of the weekend. Not the umpires did an amazing job. The guy Friday was terrible. That's one of the worst umpiring I've ever seen.
Yeah, I want to talk about Friday a little bit because, one, there were more reviews, I think, than I've ever seen in a baseball game. There was at one point where it was like a review, a pitch, and then another review. I figured at some point they were just trying to finish up the episode of Netflix they were actually watching there in the camera room because they obviously were not looking to see where the runner was on that ground rule double, you know, being 4 foot short of second base and somehow ruling that he had achieved second and scored when the ball went out of play. No idea how that came. So I just figured they were catching up on, you know, Bridgerton or something like that in the media room.
Yeah, the guy who umpired Friday night, the home plate umpire, he has no business being in D1. He that was embarrassing for him, frankly.
Yeah, it was not ideal. But despite that, we get the series against Charlotte. I was happy to see it. Got to celebrate it up a little bit on Sunday. I'm sure the guys in the dugout liked chirping a little bit there through those later innings to make sure that Charlotte remembered that. But I think that was the 100th meeting between the two schools this weekend. Was that right?
Oh, wow. I do not know that off the top of my head. That's that. I'll say yes just because he sounds smart.
Yeah, I think Andy Mashaw was saying that on the ESPN Plus broadcast. But I mean, that's pretty awesome to play one team that many times, and I'm sure that we will be back down there next season to go after him again because it was a pitching-dominated series, but it was a pretty fun one, especially if you were an ODU fan.
Yeah, I don't know if it's our third or fourth weekend next year, but I know we're going down to Charlotte next year, early season.
Love to keep that rivalry going with them. Well, Monarch fans, stay with us. We had a few minutes to chat with Jay Cassaday to talk about this past week of baseball and all things baseball related within the team. He also has some good insight as to what exactly goes on in the bullpen before that bullpen gets tapped to come into games. And then we'll follow up with that by a look ahead at a 5-game week for ODU with William & Mary and Northeastern. Stay tuned and we'll be right back.
This episode of the Monarchist Podcast is brought to you by the Pride of ODU Collective. Their mission is to elevate the experience of student athletes through name, image, and likeness, while also elevating the fan experience. If you or your business are interested in getting involved, you can reach out to us directly or go over to theprideofodu.com. That is theprideofodu.com. Thank you for listening, and go Monarchs.
Welcome back, Monarch fans, to the Hudson Homers podcast. We are joined here by Jay Cassaday. Jay, who had an incredible performance on Friday, just a tremendous night on the mound. 3 innings pitched, giving up 1 hit, no runs, 9 strikeouts, got all 9 of his outs by strikeout. Jay, thanks so much for hopping on with us today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you guys for having me. I'm really excited to be on here.
So I got to ask you, at any point in your career, have you gotten all 9 outs in a 3-inning span by strikeout?
I can't recall any start or relief appearance where I punched all 9 guys. In my past, a lot of it was starts, so I never really had the opportunity to strike out everyone I faced. Obviously, most starters, if they can go nine innings, you go nine innings, and typically you don't strike out all 27 or however many innings you play, however many strikeouts, you know, you can have in a game. So I just went out and try to get guys out, try to get the win for the team.
Yeah, it looked like your stuff was just really, really working, and they had just no chance at the dish against you. Did you anything specific you were doing on Friday, or was it just a good night where everything was working?
Well, we were coming off like kind of a mediocre outing against Rutgers, who's a good team. A lot of good hitters on that team. So me and Coach Marin kind of talked and discussed some adjustments to the mindset against right-handed hitting. We decided when I was throwing my best, we were really attacking middle in using my fastball, kind of middle in and up against right-handed hitting, and everything else kind of plays off that. So the fastball is effective at the top of the zone, and we can use that to kind of go in with the cutter and the slider. And a commitment to that mentality really helped in this last outing. I think hitters were very uncomfortable, especially, you know, I got a lot of looking strikeouts with the curveball, and it just plays really well off the fastball at the top of the zone, I think. So that was a big adjustment I made, and hopefully a commitment to that plan going forward is going to yield similar results.
I really like hearing that because there's so many guys that I think are afraid to pitch up at all when it's such an effective place to pitch to. I mean, just if only because guys don't see it often.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely a mindset shift in baseball. In the past, guys really wouldn't like to attack the lower half and try to get the ball and play on the ground, but swings are built differently now, and the stuff, especially in college and the major leagues, is so much more explosive than it was. People's fastballs, the velocity, the average velocity is such a significant increase. Off-speed stuff is harder, it's sharper. So I think you can really blow up bats at the top of the zone if you execute correctly.
It seemed like the entire pitching staff this weekend was just on fire, striking guys out. I mean, 49 total strikeouts over the four games, really, if you go back to East Carolina. And then lefties in particular, they faced 56 batters, got 30 strikeouts. That's just ridiculous in a short span. And it's not like you're playing cupcake opponents either. I mean, these are the teams that are picked to finish 1-2 in the American this year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as a staff, each guy knows what their job is, basically. They know what their strengths and weaknesses are. And I think our coaching staff does a really, really great job explaining that to guys and then giving them the ability to implement that in play. So a lot of the strikeouts, a lot of the success that we see is just that commitment to being in our zones and doing the things that we do well. So it's really, the results are amazing and great, and hopefully they continue. But it's more of a process thing, and I think our guys are doing a really great job with that.
You transferred into Old Dominion from Christopher Newport, had a really great career there. What's been the biggest difference, in your opinion, from going from a Division III powerhouse now coming up to Old Dominion? What are the biggest differences that you've experienced in the, I guess, 9 months or so you've been here with Old Dominion?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think coming in and meeting all the guys, you could tell that there's an aura of talent and experience among the guys. They know good baseball. They've been around good baseball. And we had that at Christopher Newport as well. But, I mean, the guys are typically a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger, a little bit faster. They hit the ball a little bit harder when it's put in play. So I think those are the immediate things you see. Obviously, the talent level in competition is better. I mean, we've been playing some of the best, what feels like the best opponents in the country. I mean, we've played UVA, we played East Carolina. Rutgers was really good. Even Charlotte this last weekend, they were a good team as well. So you come up and you're facing the best of the best. It's definitely different. But at the end of the day, you are still going to toe that rubber. You're on the mound and you need to execute regardless. So there hasn't really been too much of a difference. Like, a game is a game, if that makes sense. So whether it's for Christopher Newport, whether it's for Old Dominion, you are the guy on the rubber and your team is dependent on you. So I think the coaching staff has helped me become a better pitcher than I was at Christopher Newport. So that's obviously a large confidence boost for me. So I know that the competition is significantly better probably than the Division III Christopher Newport school was, but I would say the competition, the guys I'm around are very different, and it's just awesome to be a part of a Division I school. The treatment's a little better as well. So those are the biggest things I would say.
And you aren't alone in that transition from Division III. You've got Hunter Cole, who is a stud at Randolph-Macon, and Brandon Pond, who won a national title down at Lynchburg. The three of you kind of bonded together based on those similar backgrounds?
Yeah, so I've been playing Hunter and Brandon for the last 3 years at Christopher Newport, and I always thought that they were great competitors. Those were the guys that you kind of looked at and you were like, those are the guys on their team. So Hunter Cole with Randolph-Macon, that was like one of their guys, you know, and so was Pond. And I just remember watching Pond be very dominant in Division III baseball. I was always really impressed with the way he handled himself. And we had a nice conversation. I believe it was my sophomore year at Christopher Newport. He was dealing with the shoulder injury at the time. But I just remember thinking about how great of a competitor he was and he seemed to be. And Hunter Cole, I remember playing first base a game. Maybe it was my sophomore year. And I was playing first base, and he might have hit the farthest ball I've ever seen at Captain's Park. It was launched over the scoreboard in right field. I turned around, and I was shocked. He had an amazing game for them, and they ended up beating us. So I just remember those two being great competitors, and that's something we bonded over for sure.
That's awesome to hear. Funny how things end up working out. You're on first base with them when you're on first when he hits just a tank over the scoreboard over there at Captain's Park. That is pretty cool. We talked to Jacob Gomez. We talked to Stephen Meyer on the podcast before. But just curious, you know, like a living situation, like who is in your house, who are you relying on, and who are you spending a lot of time with outside of baseball activities?
Yeah, so I live with Gomez, Mueller, and Tone. It's been fun living with them. I really try to maximize my time with each guy. I think each of my teammates has such a beautiful uniqueness to them. I don't really want to like pick and choose. I just want to maximize my time with each one. But I'd say I find myself hanging around like Pond, Kuehl, Dylan Brown, Trent Harker, and then the guys who live with Bash a lot. I would say those are probably my biggest guys I hang out with the most. So, but honestly, I would be happy to spend time with literally any of my teammates. I think they're all great guys.
That's awesome. CB, do you have any questions there? I've got some other fun ones if you don't.
I love the beautiful uniqueness of each of your teammates. That's a wonder. I know Finney, the English major, and both of us, we'd be happy to hear that. That's a wonderful phrasing, Jay.
Yes, thank you.
I do wonder, are you going to be you bugging Finney, you bugging Hage, any to get some action there at the plate if you can get some at-bats? I mean, if anybody doesn't know, Jay plays first base. Christopher Newport, I'm looking here, 214 at-bats, got a .315 batting average, you got 14 doubles, 38 ribbies. Like, these are solid numbers.
Thank you. I came here to be the best pitcher I can be, and I wanted to get better so that I would have the possibility of playing professionally. But I'll sometimes throw in a joke to Hage or to Finney, or whoever's really around, like if you need a left-handed pinch hit home run, like I'm your guy or something along those lines. They usually laugh, think I'm joking. It's like 95% joking, 5%, like maybe it could happen. But I'll tell you what, these Division I arms are no joke. I would definitely need some time to get acclimated, you know?
I was going to say, you might not know this. A few years back, Morgan McGuire was a pitcher for us, and he ended up kind of being our ace by his senior year. and was dominant. And by the end of the year, I don't know exactly what the deal they worked out was, but by the end of the year, they gave him an at bat. And he took his hacks. I mean, we went down swinging, but I'm just saying there's precedent. You can work out a deal with him. That's all I'm saying.
That's awesome.
Well, it's too bad you were already out of the game on Friday, because we were going through left-handed pinch hitters pretty quickly there in the bottom of the ninth. That could have been your chance if we got a couple more guys on.
Yeah, that guy would not have been fun to see, though. I'll tell you what, coming out in first AB, seeing 95, 96 with two off-speed pitches, that would not have been a fun reintroduction to the hitting side of baseball.
Yeah. We asked this question to Jacob. We're going to ask it to anyone who comes out of the pen, who comes on the podcast. Every bullpen has some weird thing that's going on, something to occupy the time. So we're going to ask you, what's the weird thing that happens out there in the Old Dominion bullpen to occupy the time before you come into the game?
Well, we've been playing a lot of password recently. So it's like a game where you've got a partner and you try to guess the word that basically your partner comes up with. You're given like synonyms and you try to guess what the original word is. We do that a lot. We play a lot of like hacky sack and soccer touch. You probably heard that from Jacob. We will toss a football around, do handstands, just try to keep things fresh and new. And then I would say most of the bullpen guys who are hot, they'll go down and run down in like the fourth or fifth inning to start getting going. But other than that, most of the guys are kind of locked into the game in the dugout. Probably the best way to be for that. What else do we do? I think that might be it. We do. We've got a fun little dance as well. So we love the two ball. So someone gets on first, less than two outs. We induce the bounder. So we dance. So we like all the guys in the bullpen have been doing that. And that's super silly. But it's so that we can roll double play. And it's happened a couple times. And it's super, super fun and hilarious when it happens after the dance.
Yeah, imagine the celebration when that works is pretty epic down there.
It's awesome. It's awesome.
All right, cool. Well, one last question for you. We know that the EA Sports college football game is coming back this summer after like a 10-year absence. I know CB and I, or at least I do, I miss the college baseball version of that that used to come out as well. I still have an old copy. I think it was like 07 or 08. I think it was in college at ODU at the time. So if they were to fire that college baseball game back up, what rating are you giving yourself? And then how much would you dominate your teammates playing that?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. So who would be a 99 in college baseball right now? Like a Caglione?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a great choice. Because he'd be 99 on both sides.
That's tough. Wow. That's a great question.
You can get your at-bats that way.
I'd have better hitting stats than the rest of the pitchers, but I mean, it wouldn't be that impressive, I don't think. I think from a pitching side, maybe a humble like 83 and a half. I think I'll lose a couple ticks for velocity. If I was sitting 95, I think my rating would go up a little bit, but I think I'll craft you for sure. Worthy of some rating points there. Definitely can feel the ball. So, you know, the PFPs are going to be highly rated. But yeah, I'd say probably like 83.
So the sneaky 83 that you put in there and then come out of nowhere and end up just dominating the game. I like it.
Exactly right. It's like the 83 that you pick because you like to pitch with him. It's not like, you know, Gerrit Cole might be a 99 in MLB The Show. But like maybe you want to throw with someone else, you know, because it's more fun.
Yeah, I mean, I was gonna say you have like an 83. Anybody can beat you with the 99. But if you got some skill, you pull out the pitcher with the 83 and you beat him with that. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you just kind of mess with them too, right? You're just throwing them breaking stuff that is pinpoint located, and then they're just really mad trying to figure out why they keep swinging 5 seconds too early on a breaking ball.
Yeah, it's like. It's good enough to sneak by bats early in the count, 0-1, top of the zone. It, like, catches you by surprise a little bit from my release height and just kind of how I throw it and hide it. And then, you know, like, the off-speed stuff will just put you away. That's the idea, hopefully.
I like it. Hopefully that game will come back at some point so we can build the ODU team on there and have some fun. I'm sure Finney would not be pleased because you guys would just be playing that all the time, kind of like Coach Ronnie for football is worried about that over the summer.
Absolutely. It would definitely be – we'd be playing that all the time. All the time.
All right. Awesome, Jay. Well, we really appreciate you spending a few minutes chatting with us, talking about the weekend and talking about ball. We hope to have you on at some point again here in the future. But thanks so much for joining.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much for having me. It was a blast.
Welcome back to the Hudson Homers podcast, Monarch fans. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Jay. We sure did. Awesome, awesome guy. CB's been raving about him for a while, but really cool to chat with him.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan. Got to see him pitch for the Peninsula Pilots in the summer. Had me texting Marin, our pitching coach, every week, every time I saw him, trying to get him to go break the rules and get him to come from Christopher Newport to the point where it's like, I can't do this, stop. But he's a great kid, and so it's very exciting to see all the success he's having.
Watching him in person pitch on Friday, you know, getting those 9 strikeouts over 3 innings, I was just sitting there wondering how in the world did he ever end up in Division III? I think we found out some. He played some in the field, and he was out there and really developed, but he's got that goal of trying to make it professionally as a pitcher. And if he can do what he did on Friday and keep replicating that, that is not a goal that is out of reach for him by any means.
Yeah, I mean, you keep showing up and pitching big, you know, the scouts find you, that's for sure. I honestly, a couple of years ago, like when he was with the Pilots, I thought a couple of teams were going to draft him then.
Yeah, and there were definitely quite a few scouts around this past week. I know especially some on Friday. I'm sure they were looking at a couple different guys. But, yeah, I mean, to have that performance with some eyes on you does not hurt things.
Sure does.
All right, well, we're going to look ahead to a 5-game week for the Monarchs. A little bit more hectic schedule. We're going to have a 2-game set with William & Mary. The first one on Tuesday at 3 down here at the Bud. And then on Wednesday, they're going to travel up to Williamsburg for a 3:00 game to return the trip there with the Tribe. And then we have Friday, Saturday, Sunday with Northeastern coming to town. Looking at William & Mary, they're 8-3 overall. At one point this season, they have won actually 8 in a row. I think they stepped up in their competition a little bit and lost some games. Coming off the Central Virginia Classic where they went 1-2. Beat Central Connecticut State and then lost some really close games to Boston College, who was a really, really strong program, and then lost a 1-run game to Sacred Heart. Earlier in the year, swept UMass Lowell, and they did beat University of Richmond 10-1. That's the only road game they've had this season, but they obviously played pretty well there on the road. And just looking through their lineup, looking through their stats and some video and things, they've got some dudes that can hit the ball. And I know CB, you wanted to talk about Jerry Barnes III a little bit since he's a local kid.
Yeah, Jerry, he's from right here in Virginia Beach, went to First Colonial. Great kid, big, thick body, strong catcher. Guy would just hammer the ball in high school. I think he's a sophomore now. He's hitting, what, 345, 992 OPS. So I mean, really just doing great. So that's good to see for him. I'm glad he worked his way and got himself in the lineup. Very excited. You know, he, again, just a great ball player. So it's always fun. You see the local kids and see him doing well.
Yeah, absolutely. And Joe De Los Santos, he is the big bat to watch in their lineup. He's in his 5th year with William & Mary. He's, you know, casually hitting 435 this season, 1.297 OPS. He's got 4 bombs, 15 ribbies, and he's also 5 for 5 stealing bases. So he is definitely someone that will be a big focal point for the pitching staff to get him out, limit the damage that he is able to do. They also have a Division III transfer, just like we have a couple of those, and talking with Jay about some of them. Ben Parker came in from Whitman College, had just about every accolade and award you possibly can from a conference standpoint, All-American when he was there at Whitman. He's got a 1.038 OPS. He's hit 3 home runs, got 13 RBIs. So those are 3 guys there with Joe De Los Santos, Jerry Barnes III, and Ben Parker that you need to watch in the lineup. Pitchers, they've got a couple guys that can throw the ball pretty well, but Mark Hendy is the reliever you want to watch out for that we're likely to see at some point over these 2 games. 0.75 ERA in 12 innings pitched, 16-3 strikeout to walk ratio. They've got a tough team that's going to be tough these next 2 days.
And William & Mary, even when they don't have a tough team, they play ODU extremely tough every year. So I'm sure they'll be up for these 2 games or ready to go. I mean, there was one year where they were just terrible and they came into the Bud and beat us pretty good. It was honestly kind of embarrassing. I think that really might have actually kept us out of the tournament that year. So it's going to be, you know, hey, you got to go in. I think I'm sure on paper and probably in reality, ODU is a better team. You just got to go out and prove it.
Yeah, and we've seen plenty of upsets across college baseball. I think East Carolina lost to Southeastern Louisiana on Sunday, which is a game that they definitely should not lose with the team that they have. So we've got to bring it for these two midweeks. Get one at home and one on the road. Get some more road experience there. I think will be good. Pay some dividends for us later on.
Yeah, I saw on Twitter their fans were going a little, you know, having a normal one over it. They were, you know, very normal reactions to losing a baseball game.
Yeah, it's always in them. And was it South Carolina? They got beat by Clemson a couple times this weekend, and their fans had just an amazing reaction to losing to their rival, I think, again. Looking on to the weekend series, we've got Northeastern. They're kind of an interesting one to try to figure out. They were ranked in the preseason in several polls, anywhere from, I think I saw them as high as 19 and one, down to 25th in another. They have since fallen out of the rankings, at least for most of them. There's like a billion college baseball ranking systems out there. But they're, you know, 5-3 to start the season. They've got a midweek on Tuesday against Georgia Tech. They're kind of doing this like big southern tour here while the weather is somehow worse up in the Boston area, where they had 2 out of 3 to Mercer. They've got the midweek with Georgia Tech, but they did beat Minnesota. They had a 2-game set with Minnesota down in Florida. They beat them both times, and they had a pretty cool thing that I think we used to do with the Tides, where they got actually an exhibition game against the Red Sox earlier this season. So they've definitely seen some decent pitching and played some good teams, but they are definitely coming to the end of a very long road trip coming into Norfolk.
Well, they played the Red Sox at the Little Fenway down there in Fort Myers, Florida.
That's right. That's right.
But yeah, I will say I looked at the box score of that, and I did not recognize a single name of the Red Sox players, except for I think Nick York was their first round pick a few years ago. So I hope the real big league guys were at least there, that they got to meet them some. But still, it's pretty amazing to get to play. I mean, that ballpark itself, the spring training park of the Red Sox, is amazing. And getting to play on the field against guys who at least are pro players. I mean, it's been 2-7. It wasn't like they didn't hold their own.
I'm sure that the guys on the 26 or 27 man roster, whatever it is now, we're not throwing, but you still probably saw some decent minor league arms that are coming in there. So, yeah. But just cool experience for them, especially kind of liven up this long road trip they have to start the season. But they've got two pretty big boppers in their lineup. Alex Lane, big guy, I think he's like 6'5", plays first base, outfield, DHs for him. He's got a 1.353 OPS, 3 bombs, 10 ribs. He can absolutely crush a baseball. And then Tyler McGregor, 1.123 OPS. So two pretty big boppers in their lineup. They've got some other guys too, not trying to sell them short, but those are two that stuck out to me just with how strong they are. And that OPS is pretty crazy, especially early in the season.
Their batting average is high. I mean, this, especially for, you know, having kind of a 5-3 record, it's, you're not exactly killing, you know, the wins and all, but yeah, they're clearly can hit. So this is going to be, that'll be a good contest for their hitting versus our pitching.
And a couple of pitchers I want to talk about too. Wyatt Scotty, who's going to be their Friday starter. If you look at his numbers, they don't look that impressive. And really that goes back to a tough outing that he had to open the season against Arizona. But he's been pretty good since, through 5 scoreless against Minnesota, only gave up 2 earned runs and 5 1/3 against Mercer. So I would expect him to be pretty sharpened up when he comes in to pitch on Friday. And obviously we've had some struggles on Friday through our first two series openers recently against some good pitching. So hopefully you're able to get on and tag him earlier. And then coming out of the bullpen, they've got a big lefty. His name's Will Jones. He's got a 1.38 ERA over 13 innings pitched and a 13-1 strikeout to walk ratio. One thing I noticed from their top line guys is they do not issue very many walks.
That's the way to win. If you keep guys, you know, that's one thing I've been loving the ODU dugout every time they get a walk. It's like, we love the free ones. I mean, that's the reality. If you can limit your own mistakes, it makes it hitting a lot harder.
As you saw on Saturday, it's all over the weekend, really. We were able to put the ball in play, take advantage of some of those mistakes, and scratch out runs to get those wins. So I would imagine to expect to see much of the same, just maybe with fewer number of free passes.
If our good pitching can beat their good hitting, and we can keep our, you know, guys. Like I said, we have a few guys. It seems like they're kind of finally getting things moving in the right direction and get some more timely hits. You know, no reason we can't come out of here with another series win.
3-1 weeks are great, but you know what's better than a 3-1 week? A 5-0 week. So I'd love to see everybody break out. That would be amazing.
I mean, yeah, I'm all for, like I said, the way my mom likes it. I'd love to see 20-0 in every game and just blow them out of the water. And we all come into next Monday feeling amazing about things.
That would be great. That's some pretty high expectations, but we've got two ball clubs. They're going to give us everything they've got. So it's we're going to have to go out there and earn it. Just like you were talking about, play good baseball, do your job. But I'm really hoping to see some of those bats continue to break out, get some production from the bottom part of the lineup, because if they do and we get a repeat of the pitching we had this past week, whew, look out. We may be racking up those dingers and stolen bases a little bit more quickly this week.
It's interesting to say that you got a team hitting, what, 215 as a team. And, you know, but you're looking at it, this could be a special team. This pitching is very special. And the lineup, the pieces are there. They just need to see some more production. So if our guys can, you know, just keep having the right approach, keep really, you know, attacking things the right way. I was talking to one of the coaches this weekend, and he was saying, you know, I just wish the guys would trust the data more, you know, as far as the hitters. Like, I wish they would realize they spend this time, they compile these things, they say, you know, we know these pitchers are going to do these things in these situations, and, you know, trust that more. You know, find, again, just have that really good approach and you come up. So it's weird to look at this team and the way they're going right now, especially offensively, and say, I think they could be special, but we've got the makings of a special team, I think.
I forgot to mention this earlier when we were talking about the East Carolina game, but you're talking about special team, having some things together. Evan Holman's play at the plate against East Carolina, really in Luke Waters' throw coming in from right field. But for him to hold his ground, deal with the dude trying to jump over his head, and basically look like he just ran smack into a wall, that was one of those, I think, special moments that you'll look at along with the walk-off home run. But that was a huge play in that game, and our dugout was pumped as soon as we knew that Evan was okay.
Yeah, I'm glad you remembered to bring that up, because Evan deserves all the credit in the world. He is he's a brick wall back there. He's a tough guy. You can tell the pitchers like throwing to him. I think when some things get going, he's going to be a very solid hitter on top of all that. But just defensively, and it's what he does wearing the mask is something special. And that play, you're right, that was amazing. I wasn't there for that, but some of the pictures that people got of that were amazing.
Yeah, and the company that does the cameras that hang there over the dugout actually released like a compilation video of it the next day. We put it out on the ODU Monarchist Twitter, and it got spread around quite a bit. But just an amazing play in an amazing game that we won in just a cool fashion with the walk-off. But you want to probably go ahead and clip that in and save that for your highlight reel at the end of the season, because that was a big reason why we won that game. But it was a big reason why those guys were so fired up the rest of the way.
I mean, you got to have big guys make big plays in big moments. It sounds cliche, but it's that for a reason.
All right, well, that will do it for us for this episode of Hudson Homers. We appreciate you listening in. Remember to tell your friends, tell everyone, like and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. I'm Gary. Thanks so much for listening. Go Monarchs.
I'm CB. We appreciate you. Go Monarchs.